behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
Boom, and I'm Ben Bullock.
Oh, nice, Ben. How many explosion sound effects can we expect today?
Counting the ones I did off air practicing.
Yeah, I mean, you walked into the room making explosion sound effects.
Actually, so. I did. Yeah. I was pretty excited about this one because this is something that some people have doubtlessly wondered about. I mean, listeners, surely I'm not the only guy who's watched an action film and notice that these cars are just the firecrackers on tires.
Well, they're left and right. They're just exploding everywhere. I mean, I don't know how we are able to drive without our cars exploding.
Yes. How on earth have we been able to go in Atlanta traffic for years without being treated to a cavalcade of explosions?
I've never seen even one, Ben. Never seen one explode.
I have also never seen a car explode in real life. Now, I've seen a car do some pretty intense burning, which is still spells death for the car.
Yeah.
But that's a very different thing.
It is. And we'll talk about that, too, I promise. But, you know, we need to just get this right out front that, you know, Hollywood has made us believe that anytime there's a car fire, you can expect a car explosion to follow, right?
Right. Exactly. Even if a car just tumbles down a ravine, it explodes.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah, I can picture exactly what you're talking about. The car drives off the cliff down towards the ocean and tumbles and falls onto a rock,
which settles,
and then kaboom, right?
Which is still not quite what you're talking about, but we're talking about two extreme examples. Your point about seeing a car with a fire and then knowing, oh, because it's a film, our protagonist has about 3 seconds to run away in slow motion.
Exactly. Now, the truth is, I mean, we said this already, but cars will burn, sometimes completely, but it's very, very rare that a car will explode. Very rare.
It's like it's a perfect storm. And what we'd like to talk about are a couple of things here. For instance, the Ford Pintos were notorious for exploding,
oh,
right?
Yeah, you know what? I've got some stuff on this. Can we hang off on the Ford Pinto discussion until just a little bit later, because I've got a little bit of a tie-in with popular media, and I think people are going to know what that means already, because there's a famous case that goes along with this. But I do want to get to it. I promise we'll talk about that, because that's one part of my notes. But I think maybe we should talk about, like, maybe gasoline itself.
Oh, the basics. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess let's just talk at the basics first, and then we'll get to the Pinto stuff, I promise. But, you know, the basics are that gasoline itself doesn't really want to explode.
Right. Gasoline is not an explosive chemical on its own. So the auto ignition temperature, and that would be the temperature at which gasoline appears to spontaneously combust,
mm-hmm.
right?
Sure.
It has to be pretty hot. It has to be between 475 to 536 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's an awful high temperature. And, you know, what we're talking about is, I guess, that, you know, it'll burn. Sure, it'll burn.
Right.
The fumes burn, of course. You know, the substance itself is flammable. It's not necessarily explosive. Now, what causes it to be explosive is that it's confined, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you would really think like that, you know, of course there's the fuel tank, right? And that's confined.
Right.
Not necessarily the case.
That's a great point, because a lot of people who would just see these movies maybe, and they don't know too much about an engine, might miss one weird truth about any internal combustion engine. It takes some work to make that gasoline ignite.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, we'll talk about the gas tanks too, but it does take a lot of effort in order to make gasoline explode. And we do it in a very controlled situation in an engine, right?
Yeah.
You have to atomize it, which is what the fuel injectors do.
Then you got to mix it with air.
It provides like a fine mist, and then you mix it with air, and it's a very calculated mixture. You know, we know exactly how much fuel is there. We know exactly how much air is there. And then you have to compress it. You know, so it's very, very dense. And then you have to ignite it with something, a spark of some kind, right? And we do that, you know, thousands of times a minute, you know, in an engine. You know, it's firing away happily. But, you know, when you take the controlled aspect out of it, and you're talking about like a collision or something like that, where a fuel tank is potentially going to explode, right?
Mm-hmm.
You think it would in a fire. All of these factors you'll find are very, very important, in that, you know, none of those are really occurring In the collision situation, you've got liquid fuel. You know, the tank may be ruptured. It may be punctured where it's, you know, pouring out fuel, which that happens. That can happen.
Like a fuel line gets set.
Of course, that can happen. Or, you know, the tank itself can be punctured by, you know, steel or, you know, wayward metal that has come in, you know, via this, you know, the bumper being smashed into it or something.
Mm-hmm.
In the ruptured tank, that's not terribly common, but it does happen. I've seen it, you know, cars losing fuel all over the road.
Right.
Dangerous situation there, of course. You know, it's not that it's not dangerous. It's just that's not going to cause an explosion. What causes the explosion is when it's confined. And even in the tank, as I mentioned, you know, the tank is working hard to prevent any kind of explosion situation. It's got baffles built into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's got vents already so that, you know, the pressure can't, you know, it's not allowed to build up quite as much as you would think in a fuel tank. And, you know, the other thing is that, you know, let's say that the tank is ruptured, you know, and fuel is spilling out. It's not necessarily the case that there's always going to be a spark or anything that's going to ignite that fuel.
That's a very, very good point. It might just be, even if we have that combination of gas and air by, you know, let's say gas is spraying out of the tank, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if we have that combination of gas and air somehow without the spark, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, and typically, after a car accident, not always, but, you know, usually the cars are not running anymore. You know, there's a fuel shutoff that happens sometimes if a car is jolted really hard. You know, I know that happens in older cars. People think to turn, you know, I hope that people think to turn off the ignition when they get out of the car. It's not often that there's, you know, just something that's, you know, wire that's laying loose sparking all over the place or, you know, there's something exceedingly hot that's going to ignite that fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, hopefully something's not dragging through the fuel and causing it to ignite as well. There's cases where it does happen, but oftentimes, you know, there's going to be fuel and no fire.
Right. Yeah. And, or there might be a fire of some sort and fuel, but not the air. So it won't make the explosion.
Yeah. There's not the factor of it being compressed or not compressed, but rather in a confined area that would, mm-hmm. that would allow the explosion to happen. That's
right.
the big thing here, or I guess really we're getting at, and mm-hmm. it's kind of the roundabout way to get to this. I think we've said it a few times. It has to be in a confined space and then it has to be ignited in that confined space. Now, if you have a confined space like a fuel tank and it is ruptured, how, you know, the spark that would have to ignite that would have to be inside that confined space. And then not only that, the point where it was ruptured is actually now a vent for it. So
mm-hmm.
there's not going to be that buildup that you would think would be there. So a lot of people have this vision that, you know, there's going to be this fireball explosion that's going to happen after an accident, but it's not necessarily the case. In fact, a car can be completely engulfed in flames and it can actually breach the fuel tank,
mm-hmm.
you know, melt it or somehow allow it to, you know, expand and then break the seams or whatever. A fuel line could be ruptured and that fuel tank will never explode.
Right. Now, it could burn intensely. We're talking like an inferno level.
Yeah. And you may hear like a big whoosh sound is what they describe it as,
mm-hmm.
you know, where it does ignite. And, you know, there's a lot of fumes that are going up. And, you know, of course, you know, big collections of fuel
mm-hmm.
that can burn. And a lot of times you'll hear tires popping and things like that, you know, in a collision, you know, in a car fire. When a car is completely burning to the ground, you know, the four tires are going to pop at some point. You're going to hear four little bangs from that, and it may startle people, cause them to jump back.
Sure.
You may hear the fuel tank when it finally is breached, when it finally does rupture, and it does make that whoosh sound. But that's not a true explosion, because a lot of times when you see a car that is completely burned, it's a shell of a car, you know, you're going to see that it's still intact. It's not completely blown apart as if there was an explosion. So
mm-hmm.
you know, you may think that a car has exploded, you know, just looking at it in the junkyard, you know, a burned out, you know, shell of a car. But then you realize like, well, that thing's still intact. It didn't completely destroy itself during this explosion, because what we're thinking of in explosions are something that would cause the frame and everything to be just, you know, shattered and shrapnel flying everywhere. And, you know, bits and pieces would be blown off of the car. That's not the case in most of these.
Yeah. An explosion would be a force of disintegration.
Mm-hmm.
Those cars we've seen that are burnt out shells are again victims of slow burn, where everything flammable went with the fire.
Mm-hmm.
But when we talk about these explosions versus fires, let's make no mistake, car fires are just as dangerous to the people driving as an explosion might be, in that things can, as the internet likes to say, escalate quickly. And not only that, car fires are much more likely, not to scare anybody, but statistically speaking, they are much more likely. We've established that We've established that a car explosion is on par with winning some horrible lottery of an accident, right?
Yeah, it's very, very rare.
Very, very. It's exceedingly rare. As a matter of fact, the good folks at MythBusters, another Discovery Enterprise that people might have heard of, did check out this myth about car explosions by shooting the gas tank. Remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that.
And they found that they had a hard time making a car explode.
It's exceedingly difficult to make a car explode or a fuel tank explode.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, can I just throw in a plug here for one of our articles, I guess, because it ties right in with what we're talking about. We have an article called Top 10 Causes of Car Fires that's on our site now. Mm-hmm. And on HowStuffWorks.com. And it goes through, you know, design flaws and electrical problems and even arson, mm-hmm. car crashes, which is, you know, probably a big concern from a lot of people, the car crashes. Crashes,
mm-hmm.
Hybrid and electric vehicle batteries, and I think the biggest thing, the number one issue, you know, there's electrical issues, of course. Fuel system leaks is the number one cause of car fires. Now, that's not to say explosions. I mean, explosions are a completely different ballgame.
Yep.
But the number one cause of car fires, or the number one on our list, anyways, is fuel leaks, and that's relatively common. I mean, that can happen. Now, that's not to say that car fires aren't dangerous.
Right.
You know, they're still extremely dangerous. You need to get out of the car, and you need to know the procedure in order to get away from the car and stay your distance. But it's not going to explode.
You know what? Speaking of explosions, I've got something for you here.
What have you got?
I was researching explosions, which is kind of cool that this is my day job to research explosions.
Not bad, yeah.
Yeah, so we've had some fun with this one, and we do this movie club on Netflix. I found a movie that I think you would enjoy as much as I did, Scott. It's called The Hindenburg.
Oh, my gosh, Ben. You found one that ties in with car explosions.
Yes. So this is kind of a loosely based on true events story. It's a fictionalized version of the events leading up to the infamous 1937 Zeppelin crash.
Yeah, the amazing crash that they captured on film. You can watch this, you know, on video, rather on film, online. Fantastic. I mean, it's horrifying to watch,
right, yeah.
But it's really striking footage.
Yes, and you can see part of the story on this, or fictionalized version of it, by going to Netflix Instant to check out this story. Now, in the Hindenburg, the film, a German intelligence officer boards the doomed blimp to foil a conspiracy to blow it up. So it's kind of like a mystery, a whodunit. He's got a list of suspects, and he's talking to these people on the blimp or on the Zeppelin, trying to figure out what's going on. And we also have a podcast on that one. If you'd like to have some more information about Zeppelins themselves, and
you know what, Ben, I was just thinking. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail you here,
no.
But I was thinking that, you know, there's a couple of reasons why a vehicle may explode.
Ooh, yeah, lay it on me.
Talk about that, and it's not what you may think. It's not, you know, any of that stuff that we've been talking about. That all stays true. You know, the fuel tanks and everything else.
Yeah.
But if a vehicle is carrying an additional fuel tank that maybe isn't, you know, a vented system or anything like that. Mm. You know, something that can heat up and can build up pressure.
Sure.
There's a chance that it could explode. Like, let's say an RV that's carrying a propane tank.
That's a great example.
And a lot of these RVs carry really big propane tanks. You know, if they're the cross-country type, mm-hmm. you know, they carry for them for fuel and for, I'm sorry, for heating fuel
and for
cooking and, you know, whatever else they have needs for heat, right? Maybe for water heaters or something
exactly,
like that, right?
Exactly, water heater.
And so they have these big propane tanks, and there's I guess, a reason to be concerned about an RV fire for that particular reason. And if, you know, a truck is carrying pressurized tanks of oxygen or something like that, you know, we've seen those canisters going down the road.
Right, yeah, and I thought that was a good point that you made, too. Car or trucks that are transporting cargo that's flammable mm-hmm. or explosive.
Yeah, and it's still not entirely likely. I mean, it's still, you know, it would take a raging fire that would really, really burn, you know, had built up a lot of pressure in those tanks in order for them to blow. But that's a great cause for concern, you know, when someone's, a first responder or somebody that's trying to save people.
Right, EMT, law enforcement.
Yeah, in an RV, it's a little bit different than in a car, because in a car, everybody thinks like, oh my gosh, I got to stay away. You know, there's, of course, you know, the heroes will rush in and help people out.
Yeah, God bless them.
We need heroes, right? So, you know, people do that, and that's good. Maybe they know that, you know, the car's not going to explode like we think. It's going to get intensely hot quickly. I need to get these people out. But, you know, the other side is that, you know, a lot of people run the opposite direction thinking that it's going to explode. That's not the case.
Yeah. And just for an example here, real world contrast, We already mentioned that fires are by far the primary concern. So the National Fire Protection Association looked at some numbers from 2002 to 2005. Of all of the cars, the vehicles in general, that caught fire on U.S. highways, only 3% occurred because of a collision.
Yeah, that's not an extremely high percent.
That's a very small percent, and that's just to underline again that one of your best preventative measures for car explosion or car fire is regular maintenance.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, we've seen a few examples in history of cars that supposedly explode, right? I mean, you mentioned early on this podcast the Pinto, right? And you want to talk about that? Well, let's talk about the Pinto now, and we'll kind of wrap it up on this, because I think we've proven our point here that cars just don't want to explode on their own, right? I mean, it has to be several outside factors that would cause a car to explode. You know, it's almost like somebody would have to load it up with dynamite or something like that. Almost like the Hollywood stunt technicians would do, you know, that would load up cars and make them appear as if they're going to be exploding every time they get, you know, rear-ended, right?
Right, yeah.
Well, the Ford Pinto that you talked about, kind of a similar thing was going on in a different way, though. I mean, this is real life, of course.
Yeah.
They did have a problem, right?
Yeah, and it all goes back to a nuts and bolts issue, literally. The bolts that were behind the rear bumper on the Ford Pinto were too long.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I've got a little more to add to this, Ben.
Yeah.
Because we've all seen the footage of those things being, you know, pushed in from the back end, fuel sprays everywhere, a fire ignites, and then, you know, that's a terrible fire. And, you know, there were a lot of deaths, actually, that happened because of that, right?
Right, yeah. So when a rear collision occurred, the bolts, because they were too long, would get knocked forward, doing what you're talking about, puncturing the fuel tank that was positioned in the rear and causing it to leak. But this did lead to deaths.
Yeah, it did. Something like 27 deaths, or I think it was, and Ford paid, you know, a big lawsuit for this, and there was a, you know, a dramatic redesign in the vehicle, and they finally dropped the line, and, you know, there's a lot of problems. But it turns out that Ford Pintos were not the only ones that had a similar design. I guess the Chevy Vega and the AMC Gremlin, the Dodge Colt of all of that era were statistically at the same risk as the Ford Pinto was. They just used those longer bolts in the Pinto, and that's why it got the bad rep. They had a similar design in that, you know, the fuel tank was in a similar position and, you know, of course, similar size.
Yeah.
And the same type of thing could have happened to those vehicles. They were all kind of in the same boat, I guess. So a lot of people don't really think about the Vega, the Gremlin, the Colt of that same era, and I kind of ran across that somewhere. And there's something else that this reminded me of.
Okay.
And this maybe is our last thing, I think. Unless you've got something else you want to add to this whole thing. It made me think about the Dateline NBC story that aired back in, I think it was in the early 1990s, like 1992. And it was General Motors versus Dateline NBC in a lawsuit that never really came to the courts. And they had this whole problem. The program title from Dateline NBC was called Waiting to Explode. Very sensational title, right?
Yeah.
And this is all about the GM pickup trucks that had what they called side saddle fuel tanks. And they claimed that they would ignite on impact on the side. You know, we saw the footage of, I think it was like an old, Citation or something being ran into an old pickup truck on somewhere in Indiana on a country road.
Yeah.
And the thing instantly ignited, you know, the huge fireball. It was a real big deal. Well, I think there were some fires involved with this, of course. But the problem was that the Dateline producers had actually attached remote controlled model rocket engines to the side of the fuel tank and ignited the fuel just before the collision, and they found it in the footage. So, you know, there's this whole, I don't know if it's slander, defamation of character, what it would be, you know, that they sued them for. But, you know, General Motors came back at Dateline and said, this isn't the case. You know, we found the tampering. They searched through something like 22 junkyards, Ben, in Indiana. They found the test vehicles that they used during this video shoot.
And found the evidence.
They found the evidence. They searched through junkyards. Whoops. They did x-ray evidence on the tanks that they found. I mean, they really went in depth with this, and they found that something like 6 frames prior to the impact, they were seeing smoke coming out of the fuel tank area. So, you know, these things were being detonated somehow, and I guess someone inside on Dateline, you know, someone leaked the information that they had, they had rigged it up with these rocket engines to ignite the fuel. Cause of course there was fuel spillage.
Sure.
But it wouldn't have ignited.
See, that's something that I think is a good lesson for us to take with us from this episode, which is that when you hear these sensational stories, as tempting as it is to accept it for fact, You have to wonder if they're playing with your emotions or sensationalizing something.
It was definitely sensationalized.
Right. And it's always good to, pay attention to that. And again, these car, you can lead a car to a fire, but you can't make it explode. That's the worst thing I've said.
Well, that's all right. We'll work on that one.
We'll pass it. Well, we can't let it in this way, Scott. I've got an awesome piece of listener mail.
All right. Let's finish up with that.
All right. So, Scott, we have a fellow from Australia writing to us. His name is Chirba. So that's not his real name, but that's what everybody calls me. Chirba says, I just listened to the Worst Cars episode, and I must say I had to write to you about it, but it might need a little bit of explanation. I was listening to the show, as I normally do while going about my day, getting ready to turn some errands and the like. Just as I hopped in my vehicle, took my headphones off, put my phone in the console, went on my merry way. I got to my destination, step out of the car, put my headphones on, take a lean on my front bumper, light a cigarette, start the episode where I left off, just as you start talking about the worst car of the 20th century, which happens to be the same make and model, the bumper of which I was leaning on.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he said, your worst car of the 20th century, my 1990 Nissan Vanette.
Oh, no, really? Oh, but he's in Australia.
Yes.
And that's the key difference, right?
Yes. Oh, man, you are brilliant at this, Scott. So he said it's not exactly the model that you and I were talking about. He said the American model was certainly the 20th century barbecue world champion. He said he drives the Australia model, which had a slightly smaller 2.0 Z20S engine with a dual plug head rather than the American engine.
He said barbecue. Now, that's the first time in this episode. I can't believe it that we said barbecue. I thought one of us would say it.
Oh, well, technically we didn't.
Yeah, true. That's true.
But yeah, so he said, I'll have no such filthy slander spread about the mighty van. And, he does say it's a genuinely great vehicle and, it's tough as nails. It rarely fails or breaks down. It won't let you down. It's not without problems. It's got the rear wheel drive, but with the engine weight balance, most of the seats, most of the body up front combined with the hard suspension and aggressive stance, it's more tail happy than the entire vehicular lineup of Tokyo Drift combined, possibly combined with Hugh Hefner.
So let me say this. I guess the version that he has, the model of that one, I guess is a superior model to the one that we had because of the modifications that were made in the United States. And that's what made it unsafe here. So, of course, that's a great vehicle.
And Chirpa's email is so well written. I wish I could read the whole thing, but we don't have time. Just some of my favorite lines here is like, while her top speed is limited, to say the least, with that big commercial gearbox in it, it'll leap off the line like it's been kicked up the backside and accelerates like a startled cat. Another one, every other pedal is heavy enough that you end up with legs like Mr. Universe. It's overpowered, harsh in every measure, uncompromising, and if you do it wrong, it will punish you. It's nearly impossible to drive in wet weather, he says. So he talks about the car. He says, basically, if you're not used to it, it's swirly, exhausting, confusing, and cantankerous. But once you get used to driving it and get a feel for how it works, it's a dream, and it's fun to drive. And he also points out that this has made him a better racer because of the way he's learned to drive this Vanette.
Very good. Well, Chirba, we did not mean to disparage your Vanette in any way. We were talking specifically about the American version, and I know that there are thousands of these things out there, hundreds of thousands probably.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think about this, Ben. Looking at the photos of the Vanette, it seems like I've been on one or two of these as a shuttle, a hotel shuttle in foreign countries. You know, whenever I'm going to and from the airport to the hotel, it seems like they've picked us up in a Vanette. And I agree, they're great vehicles, but the one that they brought here to the States, awful.
Yeah, I think it is the different engine. I think he makes a great point. Now, one last thing from Chirba. He gave us a little bit of a lesson on Australian pronunciation that I would like to read to our listeners to close the episode. While Americans always pronounce it Brisbane, he says, it's Brisbane. All right. And also for the record, Melbourne is pronounced Melbourne. Adelaide is pronounced Adelaide. Maybe I got that one wrong. Canberra, pronounced Canberra. And that should keep any unusually picky Aussies off your back in the future.
I don't know. I'll try to adhere to that, but I can't promise anything.
Brisbane. Well, thank you so much for writing to us, Chirba. Thank you, everybody, for checking out the little bit more of the real science behind the Hollywood explosions.
Yeah, there's a lot more to it than that. I mean, we were quickly going through the reasons why a fuel tank won't explode and the seams breaking and all that. You know, just dig into it for yourself, but you'll find that cars really are trying very hard not to explode, I'll tell you that.
Yes, and as always, the advice that we hope is implied in everything we talk about when it comes to a car disaster scenario, preventive maintenance will always be an advantage.
Yep, that's right, and that's where that top 10 causes of car fires article comes into play. You know, read that, you'll know exactly what not to do.
Yep, and you can find us on the internet, Facebook, Twitter, our very own website, carstuffshow.com. And if you have a suggestion for some pronunciation guides or a great car story you'd like to tell us, why not send us an email? We are
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.